So in this episode, I want to explain one of the logical fallacies that led me to this awakening. And I've come a long way. I started out as a Christian. Then I felt like the Bible wasn't being taken seriously enough. And so I went into Messianic Judaism. Then I went into being an Israelite as a religion. And then, sparked by discussions with my wife at the time, I began to question the foundations of the Bible. And then that led to even more questions and critical thinking that opened sort of new doors in my brain and my mind, and I was able to piece a lot of otherwise disconnected ideas. I was able to piece them together. So a lot of times when people think about, oh, this person's smart, that person's whatever, most of what it is how are you able to connect ideas that other people may not be able to connect? And if you think about it, that's how our brains actually work. Neural pathways, the neuroplasticity, the neurons reaching out, connecting to other neurons, passing signals back and forth. These connections can come and go. And one idea can be connected with another idea. Or ideas can be disconnected from each other. And if an idea is disconnected, then when you think of one thing, you just are not thinking about that other thing that it's not connected to. You're thinking about the other things that it is connected to. And so this is the reason why intelligence can be used against you. This is how your intelligence can actually support things in your life that are not true. So the thing that first made me really start questioning the Bible was the patriarchy and how the Bible treated women. And because of the discussions I was having with my wife, there were certain questions I really just couldn't answer. And I was someone who needed to have the answers. And if I couldn't get the answers from this book, then it was a problem. And if the book seemed to give the wrong answer, well, then that was a bigger problem still. And it's not just that the answer was wrong, it's that I was living in a society built on that wrong answer. And we have people in our society who believe it's the right answer because it's the only one they've ever seen. They don't have a working example of it being a different way, because this is what they're accustomed to. It's like if a person was born with a disability, they can imagine what it might be like to not have that disability, but they will never actually know because they don't have that experience. So we have a lot of people talking about traditional marriage and traditional wives, what everybody's supposed to be doing. When they're really just agents trying to enforce the system that has been put in place. So I'm not a person who wants to build a mansion on top of sand. The reason why the exploitation of women, because that's what it is, the reason why that has seemed to work is because women have, in the beginning, had no choice but to go along with it. But once you give them a taste of freedom and power, and I don't mean more power than men, I mean their own power being returned to them, where it should have always been. Them having a voice, their own voice, and not having to have a man to advocate for them. Of course, it's going to be men that uphold the patriarchy and say this is how it's supposed to be. Of course, it's going to be them. Because that's who benefits. And yes, there are many women who prefer to have a man support them. There's many men who would prefer to have a woman support them. Because at the end of the day, number one, we all want support. And we all want to have an easier life. That's normal. But if you tell that woman, sure, I will financially support you, but it will come at the cost of you giving up your rights and your freedoms, then let's see if she still wants that job. So when women were counted as spoils of war and basically being forced to marry their oppressors, the people who killed their family, and they're taken as servants and wives. There's just no way to dress that up. There's no way to make right of that wrong. There's really no amount of mental gymnastics that you can pull if you understand the Bible and spirituality. Unfortunately, women. Many women are indoctrinated and socialized in every part of the society that they're born into tells them this is what you are and this is what you must be okay with. And so they go along with it because they have no other real choice. At the very most, they can choose to not participate. And we're seeing that now with many women, and many men are upset by it because they feel entitled. They feel entitled to things being a certain way, with them having the power and having an easier life at the expense of women because they want to exploit. They want to exploit. And so there are many men and movements among young men especially, angry at women, who if they simply treated women well, they would get women. Women would want them. But because they are being miseducated by men who are driven by a profit motive to poison and infect other male minds with misogyny, entitlement. They subscribe to their own abuse. They subscribe to ideas and motivations that keep them single and alone. This is an ugly thing among other ugly things that enjoy biblical support. Things which, if you support the Bible, you don't naturally question. And that's part of the problem. We're not used to questioning the validity of the instructions because we believe that those instructions came from God. And if they came from God, then how could they be wrong? How could God be wrong? But what if they came from a man? What if they came from a man who simply benefits from having power over women. Because that makes perfect sense. It's explained by the motive. He has a motive. Just like the influencers on social media have a motive. And that motive isn't primarily exploiting women. Because the primary audience for that message is men. That's who they're motivated to influence. That's where they're making their money from. From taking advantage of the beliefs that these young men have. Beliefs that were programmed into them through religion. Beliefs that they don't question, because to question those beliefs is to question their God. And unfortunately, in many cases, their God is an analog for their own power, or for the power of their nation or their tribe. The God of the tribe is the power of the tribe. When that tribe needs to go to war, they call upon their God of war. This is why Yahweh in the Old Testament appears as a war god. Because in their minds, they didn't have the resources on their own to survive, so they had to take from others. The Bible says the thief cometh not but to steal and to kill and to destroy. But that's exactly what they did in the Old Testament. Because often the person who steals is a person who is motivated by the need or want to steal. Because they are lacking something. But just because you're lacking something doesn't entitle you to take it from someone else. That is bad theology and terrible spirituality. You may profit physically, but you are losing spiritually. There's always a cost, and if you can't see the cost, then the cost is to yourself. You are paying that price because you are changing who and what you are. So this bothered me as a believer. It bothered me until I allowed myself to ask even more questions. And it brought me to a logical fallacy. I realized then that mainly the reason that most people believe in God is because the fact that we are here necessitates an origin. We had to have an origin story. We had to come from somewhere. And so the idea is that because we are so complex and so intricate that we seem to be the product of design. And we can look inside of ourselves and we can see the code. It's written in our DNA. There is code. There's programming. That part is undeniable. So then we create this conclusion that not only were we created, designed, created, whatever, not only were we designed, but that designer had to have greater intelligence than the thing being designed. So then it's easier to buy into the magic and power and how God can create the whole world and do all these great things because he must be superior in order to create the inferior. And so then when we heard this thing called evolution, it's like, oh, that's crazy. How could something superior come from something inferior? Ha ha, monkey's your uncle. Not mine. My father's the king of the universe. But then I asked a dangerous question that the Bible doesn't answer and really cannot handle. And that question is simply that if my existence required a greater being, a superior being, to create me, then wouldn't the existence of a greater being require another being to create them? And here's where the circular logic dies. Because either you have an infinite number of superior creators, or you have to admit that at some point somebody came from something inferior. Either I have a God and my God has a God and that God has a God and that God has a God to infinity. Because you need one to explain the existence of the other. You need the former to explain the existence of the latter. So if that's the equation you're working with, your equation necessitates an infinite number of creators. Each one more powerful and more knowledgeable than the one that came after. And so this doesn't work. It's a logical fallacy. It's circular logic. But we're not exposed to that because the Bible makes absolutely no effort, no attempt to explain where God came from. Because as I've said in another broadcast, the Bible is not about God, it's about us. It is a human story. Any extra characters, any extra actors, they are supporting characters in our story. We need them to exist, therefore we created them. We needed to explain things to ourselves, so we created gods to represent the forces of nature. We needed to understand how the forces of nature interact with each other, so we made it so the gods could mate with each other and produce more gods. The inferior will inevitably create the superior, because that's what life does. Life is the time that we have to actually create something better. Organisms don't adapt less to their environment over time, they adapt more. They become more adept at hunting. They become more adept at smelling the scent of their prey. If they're flying overhead, their eyes sharpen to where they can see movement that you, as someone believing to be superior, cannot see. Dogs can hear sounds that you, believing to be superior, cannot hear. Why? Because they need those abilities. So nature adapts them to have those abilities. If a person had all of those abilities, we would consider them a superhero. But that would be incredibly annoying, because they would always be seeing too much. They would always be hearing too much. They would not be able to focus on the limited life around them that they actually wanted to focus on. I don't want to hear sounds from down the street. What good does that do me? So this idea that we are superior is itself problematic, because there are plenty of animals in our world that have not just superior sight or hearing, but they produce poisons. They can camouflage themselves. They can change their appearance. They can breathe underwater. They can fly. They can swim with ease. They can jump higher. They can run faster. Oh, you're so superior. But you ain't gonna fight a bear. At least not with your bare hands. The human species is a jack of different trades. Not all trades, because we can't fly. But we're a jack of different trades, not a master. And so we evolved along those lines, not being a master, not having the best sight. Not having the best hearing or the best sense of smell. The superiority we feel is because we have enough intelligence to see the things that we can make better, and we can build tools. We can externalize our power in the form of tools that can help us overcome the things that we cannot do on our own. If you were to take all the tools away and drop a human into the wild, most humans would not survive that. Because we have been conditioned to overcoming our weaknesses with tools. And eventually, the tools become superior to the human. And then humans choose the tools over other humans and say that the humans are no longer needed. Superior to what? Many of us hate each other. Many of us hate ourselves. So just like the thief, a lot of people need to feel some sort of control and superiority. And so what do? They steal it. They steal it. And and it can be stolen in the form of ideas. My God is the King of the universe. My God is greater than your God. Therefore, I am a prince. Therefore, I am greater than you. I am the chosen one. But you still won't fight a bear. You still won't race a cheetah. Probably won't even box a kangaroo. But again, it's your book. It's a book about you. It's not about God. God simply provides man with a story, with an origin story. But God himself has no origin story in the Bible because the Bible is not about him. Growing up, I used to hear how the Bible was a love letter. And growing up, everyone talked about how they had a personal relationship with God. This invisible force who they don't know what he looks like. Never had one real conversation with God, yet they have a personal relationship. Now, many people fall prey to the delusion. And so when they hear the voice in their own head, same voice that I have today as a non-believer in this alien story, I have a conscience. I have the same voice in my head that I had when I was a child. The same voice that I had when I was a believer. The same voice that at one point in my life I might have said, maybe this is God talking to me. Because I can make that voice sound like the voice of God to my own head, to my own self, to my own perspective. It's not hard. But none of you have ever had any conversation with God in which he told you something that you could tell someone else that would be utter proof that you actually talked to God. And this is also a God that you claim knows everything. Therefore, it would not be hard for him to tell you how many fingers I'm holding up right now. How many fingers I'm holding up right now. How many fingers am I holding up right now? How many fingers am I holding up right now? and you're all programmed never to even attempt to provide that proof. Gee, you ever think that might be part of the scam? Did you ever think that it might be part of the scam that you're not allowed to prove that it's a scam? That is not true. It survives on your belief, on your faith. So if you get up in church and you give a testimony that you encountered an angel or something equally unbelievable, I can almost guarantee you with a 90% degree of certainty that at least in that moment, you're going to be allowed to speak. And no one in that moment is going to contradict what you're saying. No one's going to stop you until you say something that they all know is against the Bible and against what they believe. But as long as you don't break the rules and you make up a whole lie about some conversation you had with divinity, that congregation is going to support you. They're going to support what you're saying. Because at the end of the day, they're feeding off of it. Anything that reinforces their beliefs is sustenance. And it makes them feel better that they're not the only ones that believe it. Nobody's going to launch a war by themselves. There's safety in numbers. Even when they know that some of them will die, a group of people will go to war in order to benefit that group. And so the same is true when it comes to belief. In order to benefit the group, the lie will be accepted. The lie will be taught. The lie will be promoted and proliferated across generations. That's all I have for today. But I want you to think about how the Bible is a book about humans. And the voices of the Bible are the voices of humans, whether they believe that their voice is the voice of God or not. Perhaps they believe that they were messengers because the world needed something they had to say. And I think many of us, myself included, look around and see problems and therefore believe that perhaps someone needs to hear something that we have to say. It's a way of letting your voice be heard. It's a way of having your existence matter. It's a way of possibly being remembered and outliving your physical timeline. The words of Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, as with many others, have long outlived the men who spoke them. And as long as we keep those names alive, we're also keeping their memories alive. We're keeping some part of them, some part of their spirit, alive, able to manifest and be expressed in other people who hear the same messages and who agree and who want to repeat the same words or the same ideas or the same spirit of the same ideas and principles. People who stand for the same thing. And so the spirit of our ancestors are reborn when their memories are kept in our traditions. And that's why we keep traditions as sacred, because it honors the people who came before us that contributed not just to their present, but also to our future. And there's value in that. But there's also value in telling the truth and understanding things on multiple levels. Some things can be true physically. Just like when Yeshua told a parable, like the parable of the lost sheep. Was there an actual man who had 100 sheep? I'm pretty sure he made that person up for the purpose of the story, for the need of hearing what it was he was trying to teach. It did not need to be a true story. It did not even need to be based on a true story. The story simply provided the context in which the teaching could be understood. So to act like the Bible is only valuable if it is literally true is a mistake. I believe that a lot of the people that were involved in the writing of the Bible were trying to communicate messages into the future. They were trying to teach. They were trying to inform. They were trying to correct. But when we take them out of context, when we remove them from the time periods in which they lived and the problems which they faced, then now we have corrupted their story. We are forcing them to be saying something they did not mean to say. Because our God, the God we say that they were talking about, is really not the same God that they were talking about. Even if we call the God by the same name that they used, it's our ideas that make it a different God. That's why Marcion ripped up his Bible, separating the Old Testament from the New Testament, because he said, this is not the same God. So when I say we invent God, I am saying that we as a human species have physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual needs. And those needs manifest in the things that we create. We create tools. We use our tools to externalize our power. Until the tools become superior. And so this is what I'm saying. This is what it is with God. We created tools called gods that we use to teach ourselves about the forces of nature. We used those gods, we called out to those gods, we sacrificed to those gods in order to manipulate nature. And then we said, hey, all of these many gods are, you know, that's cool and all, but what if there's one God that controls all the other gods? What if there's one ring to control the other rings? What if there's one power that can control everything? That saves me a whole lot of sacrifices, because now I don't have to appease the God of the harvest to get a good harvest, and appease some other God to make it rain. And pretend that it wasn't just going to rain anyway. Because that's what happens when we pray. Whatever was going to happen, happens anyway. But when it happens, we give credit to God. But we're also giving credit to ourselves because we prayed. We did something. And then God responded. We make it about us. We always make it about us. That's why in all of these pages, in all of these books of the Bible, no one seems to care where God came from. They say they love God, but they don't care where he came from or what his story is. Only what they need to know in relation to themselves. How can I be saved? How can I have wealth and happiness and power and influence and all these things that I want, all these things that exist in the garden of my mind and soul? How can we get those things that we want? How can we have eternal life? For thousands of years, we've always been after the same thing. And for thousands of years, we have lived and we have died. But we won't admit that we prayed and it didn't work. We prayed for world peace, and then we started wars. We send thoughts and prayers to the victims of shootings, but won't create common sense reform and legislation. We have to stop using circular logic, believing that we are superior. Because you cannot be superior without someone else being inferior. Just like how you cannot have rich without poor. So if you want to be rich, then what you are saying is you want someone else to be poor. Or to not be rich. you can't have it both ways, because the very definition of the thing is defined by people who also don't have it. And it is that pursuit of wealth that is constantly taking wealth from other people, who simultaneously we don't care about because we think we don't have to, or they're not one of us. They're not the right color, or they don't have the right beliefs. They're not the right nationality. They weren't born here. They didn't come over on the same boat. We invented special gods in order to make us special. We invented powerful gods to make us more powerful. But for every degree of specialness, for every degree of power, for every degree of might that we wanted to apply to ourselves, we equally took from the other side of the equation. What's on the other side of the equation? Other people. We create theologies based on this. We create governments based on this. We create economic systems based on this, based on taking from others. I call this predatory behavior. Out in the wild, animals hunt each other for food. We don't simply eat other animals. We consume each other. That's what you don't see. You don't see it because it is not a physical eating that we are doing. You don't see it because we dress it up and we call it something else. We create rules around how we do it, how we're allowed to do it. We create justifications for who we are so that we have the credibility and the authority. The authority to do to other humans what we don't want those same humans to do to us. There are so many people who fear black people, not because of the behavior of black people, but because they know what they did or what their ancestors did to black people. And so if you're used to thinking in terms of predatory behavior and humans exploiting each other and justifying it, what happens when you run out of that justification? Now you're left with a crime that you committed that you cannot explain away. You can't justify it. So now you're thinking, if I did it to them, if we did it to them, if our ancestors did it to them, then wouldn't they want to do it to us? It's action, reaction. Fortunately, the people who they're afraid of don't think like that. For the most part, some do. Some do because they want it to end. They want the oppression to end. And so they think it's the only way, even though it's not. The way is simply to stop the oppression. Cease and desist. And sometimes people don't cease and desist because of a strongly worded letter. They cease and desist when they're being sued, when there is a financial cost, when they are faced with repayment. But they'll make sure that that can never happen. I talk about all of these things because all of these things are connected. If you don't see that by now, if you don't understand that by now, I need you to listen harder. I need you to listen with purpose and intent. Because a lot of people could take something I say out of context and use it to attack what I'm saying in context. I know it's going to happen. I know people will be triggered. I know people are going to get defensive. But if pastors are not concerned about who they offend, then I can't be so concerned about who I offend that I don't say what I know needs to be said. The more we pretend that we care about God and who God is, because that's all it is, it's a pretense, it's a game. We're told He loves us, and we want Him to believe that we love Him too, because of what we want him to do for us, because of what he has promised us. But you don't even know him. You don't even know where he came from. You don't know what he looks like, smells like. Feels like. You'd rather imagine he has no physicality at all, just a spirit or ghost, because then no one has to agree on a description. Because it causes no conflict. And yet everything else that you see in reality has some type of physical form. Oh, air does it. God is not a gas. Gases can't speak. Gases cannot hear. If sight passes through you, guess what else will pass through you? Sound. We want to use faulty logic to justify the story we've been told. And so we tell us, oh, you can't apply science to this. He's magic. He's beyond your understanding. Why don't you just pray and he'll tell you? Why don't you wait to meet him? You know, live your whole life in service to this cause, so that one day you can ask him face to face about all your questions. Simply postpone all your questions and all your criticisms till after you're dead. And in that way, we don't have to hear it. We don't have to think about it. We just have to believe. God created us, but no one created him, because he has always existed. But if there is nothing that you can explain to me that tells me how he can always exist? If you can't explain that, then you can't explain how humans couldn't have always existed. You only want him to be special to make you special. That's it for this episode. Everyone, please be seekers of knowledge. Seekers of knowledge, not of belief. Because you can believe anything you want, but your beliefs will be exploited. And it will be exploited by predators.